Book 1, Chapter 8, Her Childhood Years. The sovereign child was treated like other children of her age. Her nourishment was of the usual kind, though less in quantity, and so was her sleep, although her parents were solicitous that she take more sleep. She was not troublesome, nor did she ever cry for mere annoyance, as is done by other children, but she was most amiable, and caused no trouble to anybody. That she did not act in this regard as other children caused no wonder, for she often wept and sighed, as far as her age and her dignity of queen and mistress would permit, for the sins of the world and for its redemption through the coming of the Savior. Ordinarily she maintained, even in her infancy, a pleasant countenance, yet mixed with gravity and a peculiar majesty, never showing any childishness. She sometimes permitted herself to be caressed, though by a secret influence and a certain outward austerity, she knew how to repress the imperfections connected with such endearments. Her prudent mother Anne treated her child with incomparable solicitude and caressing tenderness. Also her father Joachim loved her as a father and as a saint, although he was ignorant of the mystery at that time. The child, on its part, showed a special love toward him, as one whom she knew for her father, and one much beloved of God. Although she permitted more tender caresses from her father than from others, yet God inspired the father, as well as all others, with such extraordinary reverence and modesty towards her, whom he had chosen for his mother, that even his pure and fatherly affection was outwardly manifested only with the greatest moderation and reserve. In all things the infant queen was most gracious, perfect, and admirable. Though she passed her infancy subject to the common laws of nature, yet this did not hinder the influx of grace. During her sleep, her interior acts of love and all other exercises of her faculties, which were not dependent on the exterior senses, were never interrupted. This special privilege is possible also in other creatures, if the divine power confers it on them. But it is certain that in regard to her, whom he had chosen as his mother and the queen of all creation, he extended this special favor beyond all previous or subsequent measure in other creatures, and beyond the conception of any created mind. The enforced silence of other children in their first years, and the slow evolution of their intellect and of their power of speech, arising from natural weakness, was heroic virtue in the infant queen. For if speech is the product of the intellect, and as it were the result of its activity, and if she was in perfect possession of all her faculties since her conception, then the fact of her not speaking as soon as she was born did not arise from the want of ability, but because she did not wish to make use of her power. Other children are not furnished with the natural forces which are required to open their mouth and move their tender tongue as required for speech, but in the child Mary there was no such defect, for as far as her natural powers were concerned, she was stronger than all other children. And as she exercised sovereignty and dominion over all creation, she certainly could exercise it in regard to her own powers and faculties, if she had chosen to do so. Her not speaking, therefore, was virtue and great perfection, which opportunely concealed her science and grace, and evaded the astonishment naturally caused by one speaking in infancy. Besides, if it is wonderful that one should speak, who according to the natural course ought to be incapable of speech, I do not know whether it is not more wonderful that one who is able to speak from her birth should be silent for 1 year and a half. It was ordained, therefore, by the Most High that the sovereign child should voluntarily keep this silence during the time in which ordinarily other children are unable to speak. The only exception made was in regard to the conversation held with the angels of her guard, or when she addressed herself in vocal prayer to the Lord. For in regard to intercourse with God, the author of speech, and with the holy angels, his messengers, when they treated in a visible manner with her, this reason for maintaining silence did not hold good. On the contrary, it was befitting that since there was no impediment, she should pray with her lips and her tongue, for it would not be proper to keep them unemployed for so long a time. But her mother never heard her, nor did she know of her being able to speak during that period. And from this it can be better seen what perfection it required in her to pass that year and a half of her infancy in total silence. But during that time, whenever her mother freed her arms and hands, the child Mary immediately grasped the hands of her parents and kissed them with great submission and reverent humility, and in this practice she continued as long as her parents lived. She also sought to make them understand during that period of her age that she desired their blessing, speaking more by the affection of her heart than by word of mouth. So great was her reverence for them that never did she fail in the least point concerning the honor and obedience due to them. Nor did she cause them any trouble or annoyance, since she knew beforehand all their thoughts and was anxious to fulfill them before they were made manifest. When she reached the age of 2 years, she began to exercise her special piety and charity toward the poor. She solicited alms for them of St. Anne, and the kind-hearted mother readily granted her petitions, both for the sake of the poor and to satisfy the tender charity of her most holy daughter, at the same time encouraging her who was the mistress of mercy and charity to love and esteem the poor. Besides giving what she obtained expressly for distribution among the poor, she reserved part of her meals for the same purpose, in order that from her infancy it might be said of her more truly than of Job, "From my infancy compassion grew with me." She gave to the poor not as if conferring a benefit upon them, but as paying a debt due in justice, saying in her heart, "This, my brother and master, deserves what he needs, and what I possess without desert." In giving alms, she kissed the hands of the poor, and whenever she was alone, she kissed their feet, or if this was impossible, she would kiss the ground over which they had passed. Never did she give an alms to the poor without conferring still greater favors on their souls by interceding for them, and thus dismissing them relieved in body and soul. Not less admirable were the humility and obedience of the Most Holy Child in permitting herself to be taught to read and to do other things as other children in that time of life. She was instructed in reading and other arts by her parents, and she submitted, though she had infused knowledge of all things created. The angels were filled with admiration at the unparalleled wisdom of this child, who willingly listened to the teaching of all. Her holy mother Anne, as far as her intuition and love permitted, observed with rapture the heavenly princess, and blessed the Most High in her. But with her love, as the time for presenting her in the temple approached, grew also the dread of the approaching end of the 3 years set by the Almighty, and the consciousness that the terms of her vow must punctually be fulfilled. Therefore the child Mary began to prepare and dispose her mother, manifesting to her 6 months before her ardent desire of living in the temple. She recounted the benefits which they had received at the hands of the Lord, how much they were obliged to seek his pleasure, his greater pleasure, and how, when she should be dedicated to God in the temple, she would be more daughter than in their own house. The holy Anne heard the discreet arguments of her child Mary, but though she was resigned to the divine will and wished to fulfill her promise of offering up her beloved daughter, yet the natural force of her love toward such an unequaled and beloved treasure, joined with the full understanding of its inestimable value, caused a mortal strife in her most faithful heart at the mere thought of her departure, which was so closely at hand. There is no doubt that she would have lost her life in this fierce and vivid sorrow if the hand of the Almighty had not comforted her, for the grace and dignity of her heavenly daughter was fully known to her, and had entirely ravished her heart, making the presence of Mary more dear to her than life. Full of this grief, she said to the child, "My beloved daughter, for many years I have longed for thee, and only for a few years do I merit to have thy company. But thus let the will of God be fulfilled. I do not wish to be unfaithful to my promise of sending thee to the temple, but there is yet time left for fulfilling it. Have patience until the day arrives for the accomplishment of thy wishes." A few days before Most Holy Mary reached the age of 3 years, she was favored with an abstract vision of the divinity, in which it was made known to her that the time of her departure for the temple ordained by God had arrived, and that there she was to live dedicated and consecrated to his service. Her most pure soul was filled with new joy and gratitude at this prospect. And speaking with the Lord, she gave him thanks, saying, "Most high God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, my eternal and highest good, since I cannot praise thee worthily, let it be done in the name of this humble slave by the angelic spirits, since thou, immense Lord, who hast need of none, dost look upon this lowly wormlet of the earth in thy unbounded mercy. Whence this great benefit to me that thou shouldst receive me into thy house and service, since I do not even merit the most abject spot of the earth for my place of habitation. But as thou art urged thereto by thy own greatness, I beseech thee to inspire the hearts of my parents to fulfill thy holy will." At the same time, Saint Anne had a vision in which the Lord enjoined her to fulfill her promise by presenting her daughter in the temple on the very day on which the 3rd year of her age should be complete. There is no doubt that this command caused more grief in Saint Anne than that given to Abraham to sacrifice his son Isaac. But the Lord consoled and comforted her, promising his grace and assistance in her loneliness during the absence of her beloved daughter. Saint Joachim also had a visitation or vision of the Lord at this time, receiving the same command as Anne. Having conferred with each other and taking account of the will of the Lord, they resolved to fulfill it with humble submission and appointed the day on which the child was to be brought to the temple. Great was also the grief of this holy old man, though not quite so great as that of Saint Anne, for the high mystery of her being the future mother of God was yet concealed from him.